listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
I went around and went into the house, ran upstairs, told my wife...
And I do want to apologize...
We are taking the general's words very serious.
Mike, I felt this throwing up my leg.
If I were running Hillary Clinton's campaign right now, I might have a feeling actually running down my leg.
World famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast. Taking your ass to the very edge of reality since 1990, where truth is our bitch. 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And through the looking glass, we go. Welcome to our program. A Florida church vows to burn the Quran on 9/11. Floyd Mayweather has apologized for that rant that we found so amusing on Friday night against Manny Pacquiao. Dr. Ron Tarner will be with us later on this evening to talk. Finally, we've been able to lasso him to talk about the latest controversy involving Dr. Stephen Hawking, who said that God did not create the universe. And Bob Green will join us in just a moment. Mr. Green, the CEO of Fraser Foods, on making money during a recession and the new sort of instant millionaires that we see oftentimes at times in the American economy. Our number 877-876-PHIL and our affiliate spotlight tonight, a brand new affiliate in Phoenix on the air this evening at KBSC 1260 AM. We'll be on in Honolulu on Friday night with a new affiliate there in the beautiful Hawaiian Islands, and in El Paso, KROD 600 AM. And, of course, our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL is our number. And when we talk about the economy and the numbers keep getting worse and worse and worse, oftentimes we think about, you know, entrepreneurs, people that are able to make money even in a down economy, people that are able to make money with a good idea that just suddenly takes off. Robert Green joining us from Buena Park, California tonight. Robert, you have started a chain of grocery stores, 23 across the Southeast and the Southwest, and you've written a new book called The Cheap Way to the Top. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Phil, great to be with you.
So you started this business when did you start Fraser Foods?
1980.
In 1980, that's we're talking 30 years now that you guys have been at it, right?
We started the company with a store in Buena Park, California, which is where I am right now. And eventually, our second store was in San Diego. Our third store was in Anaheim. And then we went to Phoenix, Arizona, and we put another store in Tucson. We are now in the Southeast with some 20 stores, and we're opening a new store in Central Florida, in Winter Park, Florida, coming up in December. So Fraser Foods is an old-fashioned story, Phil, of building a company. You start with a good idea. You execute that good idea. You have good people with you to help you execute that good idea. And you continue to push with hard work, with intelligent marketing, with a very good product. And you can't fail if you are delivering something that the American consumer wants. Our book, The Cheap Way to the Top, is a book really about the kind of a moneymaker, a millionaire that I don't think Americans have much admiration for, and certainly none of us that have worked our way up from the bottom. I'm not denigrating for a moment the products necessarily these men sell, but I will say that it's not a real dollar. Somebody said to me once, "Are you saying that these people don't make an honest dollar?" I said, "No, I'm not saying they don't make an honest dollar. I'm saying the money they make isn't real. It isn't anything that, if I were going to play poker with these guys, I'd say you're going to have to sit down with some real money, because that money you're bringing to the table is play money."
All right, let's talk about some of these businesses that you mentioned in The Cheap Way to the Top, and then compare them to businesses that you admire. Other than your own business, what businesses would you say you admire?
Well, I admire all of the chain groceries, the Vons, the Krogers, these companies that started small and went large. Here in Buena Park, we have another business that started very small and became an international financial giant, and that is the Knott's Amusement Park.
That started out as just a restaurant, right?
Well, Knott's Berry Farm was literally a berry farm.
And then the couple was making food?
Well, when they were waiting for their preserves to be canned, Mrs. Nuts literally would make the chicken dinner or something for them, so they'd sit down and have this chicken dinner. I admire that. I admire the long-standing companies in America like IBM, long-standing companies with name value, name recognition like Sears, and they started small and they went big. You asked me to give an example.
Yeah, so give me an example from your book, The Cheap Way to the Top, of the kind of business that you don't admire or that you say is this made-up money.
Well, I'll give you one. Ben and Jerry's is an example.
Now, this has nothing to do with their politics, does it?
No, it doesn't have anything to do with their politics. It doesn't help. I don't agree with them politically, but it's got nothing to do with that. Ben and Jerry's is just not real money. It's two men that decided because they liked to eat ice cream, I guess, they would make ice cream. And the ice cream they made tasted good. I for the life of me, I can't figure out how you can mess up ice cream, you know.
Well, what about the little ideas they had for, like, Cherry Garcia, you know?
Well, if you call that marketing brilliance, then, you know, I got a bridge to sell you over that goes across the Pacific Ocean and reaches China, and you can get there in a half an hour. I don't consider that to be anything more than what a child does with a coloring book. I could have a child, and I'll tell you what I mean by that, Bill. I could have a child lay down on the floor like children do and give them a coloring book and go ahead and color. And what that child creates is every bit as good as what Ben and Jerry's did with their little names like Cherry Garcia and that fish, what do they call it, fish food?
Yeah, fish food. I don't know what that is.
Well, it doesn't sound very appetizing. Another example, I don't want to stay on Ben and Jerry too much because I've got a lot to say about them. To me, the money they make, Ben and Jerry, is not real. I wouldn't consider them to be my equal, no matter how much money they make.
Well, what if they were wealthier than you? Would you say that...
Even if they were wealthier than me, yeah.
Would you say that Ben and Jerry, it's a pretty good guess that they're wealthier individually than you?
I don't think that's a good guess at all.
But I mean, their company is more internationally known.
No, I don't think that's a good guess at all. I don't know that Ben and Jerry know anything about business. I know they make ice cream, and I know that they probably have an accountant, and I know they got lucky. And that's what I mean by the cheap way to the top. Let's make ice cream because we like to eat ice cream, and that I don't think sends a good message to the country. Two men who are obviously very bad health. You can look at both of them, and they look like they're in dismal health. And they are marketing and pushing a product that is going to degenerate the health of America. They seem to be happy about that. And it's ice cream. So I don't see any real intelligence there. I see a degenerate mentality there.
All right. Give me another. That's, by the way, the strength of your words are not lost on me, you know?
Well, I hope they're not, because...
Yeah, I mean, calling those two guys degenerates...
No, I didn't say that, Phil. I said that it's a degenerate mentality. That's a degenerate mentality to push ice cream. You are too big. Anybody that is overweight like that and pushes food, I think, is operating in a degenerate mentality. You know, my ex-wife, her mother, was very overweight. I loved the woman. I loved her, but she was very overweight. And when you came over to the house, she had cookies, she had cake. And I would say to my wife, that is a degenerate mentality to look the way she does and keep pushing cookies.
Boy, Bob, that's pretty strong to be talking about a family member. But nonetheless, I'm not going to judge you.
Well, this is a philosophy that I've got that is...
No, I'm not going to judge you. Give me another example of a company that you say is a part of this cheap way to the top?
This 99-cent store. It was started by a man named Gold. It's about the luckiest idea I ever heard of in my life. This guy, David Gold, who basically found a basement full of garbage and said, let's sell it all for a dollar apiece. That's not an inspiration. That's nothing but sheer luck. And so I don't have any respect for that. I think that... that's an idea that's going to be, it's not going to have legs.
You know, if you do you not respect? So, in other words, what you're saying is you don't respect anyone that didn't put in the years.
No, it's not that I don't respect someone that didn't put in the years, but you'll notice all of these fly-by-night, what I call fly-by-night ideas, these cheap way-to-the-top ideas, are things that we don't need that probably make us worse as people, not better. 99-cent stores, what do they sell? They have to sell garbage. There's nothing else you can sell for 99 cents. Ben and Jerry's, what do they sell? They have to sell something that's bad for you. Let's go over to Mrs. Fields. Here's another example of an overnight success, what I call a cheap way to the top. Here's a woman. I've seen her on television. She's a very attractive lady. She made these chocolate chip cookies, and now she has parlayed that into some kind of a celebrity that I don't understand. They're not very good cookies, and they're chocolate chips, so she was capitalizing on the big thing that people have for chocolate chip. And so she's a one of these cheap way to the top. I think she basically got successful because she's, forgive me for saying this, nice to look at.
All right, hold on for a minute. We're talking to Robert Greene. Boy, Bob, that last line there.
Well, she had a show on the Food Network.
Right, all right. 877-876-PHIL is our number. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Robert Greene here, and we're talking to him about his book, The Cheap Way to the Top. The people, in his estimation, who have made their money in a cheap way, in an overnight way, are not a substantial group. Ben and Jerry, David Gold, who made the 99-cent store. What about this Burt's Bees?
Yeah, well, that's another guy. This guy, Burt Chavitz. That's a product that is a con job, in my opinion. So he has taken, basically, the waste product of bees, because that's what women are rubbing on their hair and their skin. They are taking whatever you find in a bee's toilet, and they're wiping it on themselves.
And I thought it was like honey.
No, it's bee excrement. Now here's a guy that has taken Burt's.
Are you sure about that?
That is my understanding. Yeah, Phil.
But women seem to think it's great as a beauty treatment.
Women can think anything they want, but the fact of the matter remains that it's a product that I don't think took any intelligence. It didn't take any real ingenuity. And it certainly didn't take the brains that my product took. And there's others, Slinky, the Hula Hoop. These are products that we honor, and for all the wrong reasons, because the guy that came up with the Slinky, which is basically a spring, this is the guy that got lucky in a garage someplace and made $1 million. The Hula Hoop is the same sort of degenerate idea.
You in your book, you call all of these from degenerated mentalities. Before we go to our break, 877-876-PHIL, why do you call Mrs. Fields cookies, Ben & Jerry ice cream, the Slinky, the Hula Hoop, and Burt's Bees and all this stuff, why do you say this is all the product of a degenerate mentality?
It is, in my opinion, Phil, these are all products of a degenerate mentality because they're all products of a mind that doesn't want to work hard. They're all products of a mind that wants a lucky dollar, and that mind was indulged. They got their luck. They got their millions. And the products themselves, the 99-cent store is, as I said, it's got to be garbage. Mrs. Fields cookies, you can make them better yourself. The cheap garbage like a Slinky or a Hula Hoop.
And yet these are iconic products.
Well, they may be iconic, but they can be iconic, but it's garbage. Putting a plastic thing around you and swinging it around that's garbage.
The people that buy these products, then?
Well, I think they're people that have been manipulated into thinking they need something that they really don't need. My product, people need. It's food. Mrs. Fields cookies, Ben and Jerry's ice cream, Orville Redenbacher. They don't need that.
Very interesting. Robert Greene with us. His book is called The Cheap Way to the Top, Examples of People That Made Millions with Cheap, Degenerate Ideas. 877-876-PHIL. Who is the more valuable entrepreneur, the man who spends years making his money, like Robert Greene, or the overnight successes like Ben and Jerry's, which he calls degenerate? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
Because the man is dead.
Hold on. Bob Green from Fraser Foods, his book is called The Cheap Way to the Top, where he lists examples of what he calls a make-believe dollar, a degenerated concept. And you're saying things like Ben and Jerry's, Mrs. Fields cookies. These are overnight successes, right?
Pretty much, Phil, you and I were having a conversation. I hope you don't think it was an argument, because I don't have anything personally against Billy Mays. God rest his soul. Billy Mays was a marvelous pitch man. And you can't say that Billy Mays, I'm not insulting Billy Mays when I say that Mighty Putty or some of these things that he sold is garbage, you know.
Well, I don't understand what you mean by garbage, because if you say, for instance, if people are buying stuff because it's an overnight success, does it automatically mean it's garbage?
Look, if you've got a guy on TV like Billy Mays or this young man that I've seen lately who is, I think he's a Australian with this stoneware cookware where he's scrambling eggs, and I know I'm getting conned by somebody with an Australian accent, and he's talking about how great this is. I know that what he is basically pitching, the handle's going to fall off of it as soon as it gets to my house. Billy Mays was a great pitch man. But if you're trying to tell me that Mighty Putty is anything other than something you're going to have to shave a kid's head to get out of his hair, then I don't agree. And so
Billy Mays, in your opinion, is a part of this degenerate mentality.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it sends a wrong message to the kids when we're pushing this stuff that it's overnight success stuff. The ShamWow. There's one. The ShamWow has got to be, I don't know anything about the ShamWow, but I'll bet you that there are chemicals on it that would make you go blind. But it's so popular because of that guy that beat up the hooker.
Well, I don't want to get into that story, but you're saying the ShamWow, Billy Mays' Mighty Putty, and all this other stuff, basically, it's overnight success means it's cheap stuff.
It is a degenerate mentality that tells us this is valuable when it was just two fat men making ice cream. Yeah.
877-876-PHIL here on the Phil Hendry Show. And here is Yvette in Houston. Yvette, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Green. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I was just thinking that Robert Green, he's being a hypocrite because he's saying how these other businesses like Ben and Jerry and Burt's Beeswax, that, you know, their products aren't basically good enough for the people. But in reality,
I don't think they are, ma'am, only because my stores have been around for 30 years. Burt's Bees is the result of a man collecting bee excrement.
But his business, what he's been doing, he's been doing it for years, and he just thought, okay, well, this product is used for this, and it's not. You know, the product doesn't come from a bee's, you know, toilet.
What do you mean the man's been doing it for years? Burt's Bees hasn't been around that long.
I don't know. How long has Burt's Bees? Do you use it, Yvette?
It's been around for a while, and he uses herbs and all these other botanicals.
Well,
but these other companies are actually trying to start a company to meet a need for the people, a target. They're creating a target market. And, you know, if the 99-cent store is actually trying to meet a need for people that are on a budget and can buy stuff for that price, it's not garbage. Actually, people have a need for it, just like you created a company that people have a need for.
Yes, but it took me They're not on the same page with me. It took me years to develop my company. I didn't say, ooh,
you're basically, you're starting a business to make money, so are these companies.
But I'm giving people quality. I'm not giving them bee waste
and I'm not. I didn't discover Facebook full of garbage.
It doesn't matter whether you give them quality or, you know.
Of course it does. Of course
product.
It does. Can I ask you a question, Miss?
Slinky or the hula hoop, and you said it's plastic, it's cheap. It can also give,
right.
Like, the hula hoop can also give people a workout as well. Like,
well, I think you're trying to find, and what
workout,
if you look at two old men like Ben and Jerry who look like they both have diabetes and they're pushing ice cream, do you not feel assaulted? I would.
All right, well, we'll take a break. We'll be back. Thank you very much, Yvette. 877-876-PHIL. Who's better, Bob Green or Ben and Jerry at
Phil
making money?
Henry.
I am.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Robert Green joining us from Fraser Foods. He's written a book called The Cheap Way to the Top, and we're talking about people, businesses, individuals, entrepreneurs who have made a splash. They've made a splash on the financial page as well as in your local supermarket, pharmacy, convenience store, wherever. And Bob, you're the CEO of a grocery chain, a traditionally built enterprise of some 30 years. And in your book, you take on what you call overnight successes that spring from a degenerate mindset.
That is correct, yeah.
And again, I want you to describe that for me so that then we'll get into some examples. But what do you mean by a degenerate mindset?
As I said, I think that a degenerate mindset is someone that did not work very hard at developing the idea that they've got. They suddenly found that a lot of people wanted what they didn't take a long time thinking up. And the thing they want makes them worse as people, not better. The 99-cent store. That didn't take a lot to think up. This guy David Gold lucked into that idea. In fact, I think that that idea is such a bad idea, and it, there's no real logic as to why it's a success, that I suspect many of these people of some kind of subterfuge, either paying off for the lease. I don't know what they did. You know, paying off people to have their product put in a display and have another product taken.
You're, in other words, some illegal or unethical...
It seems that way to me.
Behavior?
It seems that way to me, yeah. Orville Redenbacher is a classic example of an individual who... Popcorn is not a brain surgeon type of product. Orville Redenbacher, all you have to do is look at him to know that this is not a giant businessman. So why would I want to buy that? Well, I wouldn't. I think anybody that would want to buy what Orville Redenbacher is selling has a degenerate mindset, because Orville Redenbacher, a guy that looks as if he is the son of a... He looks Amerasian, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that has nothing to do with making popcorn, so I don't understand that.
And, well, I don't understand why you would criticize that, you know?
Well, I just... Again, there's something wrong with this picture. Orville Redenbacher making money at popcorn. The 99-cent store making money. There's something wrong with a man that had bypass surgery in 2001, this Ben, selling ice cream. There's something wrong with this picture. So
you suspect all of these people of having done something illegal, illicit, unethical.
Something that I think if they hurt someone along the way. There's somebody that got hurt. There is a competing business, the owner of which is wincing in pain today as he sees their success and he sees his destroyed business. They ripped somebody off along the way. I just refuse to believe that Mrs. Fields was able to sell chocolate chip cookies because she just happens to bake them real good. No. Forget it. No way.
877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show, talking to Robert Green about the book, The Cheap Way to the Top. Now you came up on the slinky, the hula hoop, and things like that, which you also say are products of not a lot of imagination.
No, they were not products of a lot of imagination. They were, again, a very lucky way for someone to make a lot of money. And we celebrate that. I don't think it is the right message to send our young people to say, here's a guy in a garage that came up with a spring that goes down some steps. Isn't he a genius, and isn't he a great American? Well, no, he isn't. He's lucky. By all intents and purposes, he most likely hurt someone on his way to success. His slinky probably was the theft of another idea. The same with the hula hoop. God knows how many people were hurt or went bankrupt so that Wham-O could have their moment in the sun. How much bloodletting?
But hold on for a minute. You're not talking literally.
No, I don't mean literally, but how much pain and how many people were put out of homes and put in the street so that a hula hoop could make a big splash?
877-876-PHIL, talking to Robert Green here. Let me go over to a phone call. Keith in Abilene, Texas. Keith, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Robert Green. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I would just like to say I think it's kind of unfair for this guy to say this about people who invented things, which made America, you know. I think he's just upset because he's probably
getting
sales at his restaurant that he needs at a time of recession. You know, I see it here where I am, and folks is not going in the restaurants and they're closing up. And, you know, I think you're just being unfair for people who invented things, you know, talking about, you know, these fly-by-night businesses, you know, because nobody's coming in your restaurant.
Well, what about that, Bob? What about, what about the idea that, what about what this gentleman's saying, Bob, that, you know, there might be a little sour grapes?
First of all, sir, I don't own a restaurant. I own a grocery store. And businesses, it could be better. Am I angry because Orville Redenbacher, who doesn't know anything really about anything, made a lot of money with a popcorn bottle of, you know, of whatever he calls it, Joy Pop or something? Of course I'm resentful. Wouldn't you be? Wouldn't you be resentful?
You know, you wasn't feeling like this a while back. You're only feeling like this because the way the economy is treating everybody. So you do have something that the people do need. They need to eat. But, you know, you probably
yes,
sit in your restaurant not getting any sales thinking that, okay, you just saw this kid rather go to the dollar store to buy a hula hoop instead of your food.
Well, I think that it is a degenerate, again, I will go to this word, a degenerate mindset that a kid goes to get a hula hoop instead of coming to my store to buy a candy bar. And that bothers me because the guy that invented that hula hoop did nothing really special. Think about it. You and I could have done that. How many people?
Well, I am an inventor.
You probably invented a lot of stuff, yeah. But how many people are dead today? Dead as a direct result of this guy walking all over them on his way to the top with his hula hoop. How many people died?
I would say this.
How many people died when the guy made the slinky?
What do you mean dead? You're talking.
Phil, I know business, and this gentleman probably knows too. It is a bloodthirsty, bloodletting business, and a guy could come up with something as benign as a hula hoop or Mission to Marzipan ice cream, and there are dead bodies littering the road to that invention.
Go ahead, Keith. I'm sorry.
Well, Mr. Henry, what I think is that as this guy, this gentleman, talking about degenerate mindset folks, coming up with things that's just not needed. Yeah, there's a lot of things out there that I feel is not needed as well. But, you know,
while the sales
is not there, you just need to make a lot of more noise about advertisement. I mean, advertisement is a multi-billion-dollar business. So just
advertising. I think it takes a very degenerate customer to buy ice cream from a guy that has had bypass surgery.
But if this guy wanted to come in your store to eat, you wouldn't have a problem with that.
Well, sir, I can tell you, I don't look like Ben and Jerry, two guys that look like they've lost their spleens.
All right.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
There's people that look like they came out of a carnival. But what does that got to
do with anything? Exactly. Yeah. Well, okay. The guy that
you
came up with
that,
the guy
that you're not getting
the guy that came up with Burt's Bees,
make
the guy
that came up with Burt's in advertisement, and you can get the business.
Look, sir, the guy that came up with Burt's Bees looks like he sleeps in a van. He looks like he sleeps under his truck at night. And yet he's been able to sell to the tune of millions bee waste for women to wipe
on
their
what?
Face.
I would
waste.
Say this, man. If
that's
you
right. Know, comes right out of a bee's you-know-what.
Okay, I'll tell you what. You sound like you might be able to do well in the comedy business.
Boy, no kidding.
Well, you know, you guys can laugh. No, you can make fun if you want. You can make jokes if you want, but I'm telling you right now, I don't understand how a guy makes millions of dollars on a product. Bees, Burt's Bees, this is a con job that goes back to the days of snake oil salesmen. I'm telling you, it goes back to the days of goat gland grafting.
All right, listen, thank you, Keith, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Robert Green of Fraser Foods. That was a pretty funny line, Bob. You know,
what is funny about a man who has conned millions of American women with his Burt's Bees into wiping on their mouths something that comes out of a bee's ass? And I
we don't know that that's the case. This is, it's honey wax, I thought.
No, it is not. That's the whole thing with Burt's Bees. That's what makes it organic, and it makes it very, I don't know what you want to call it, very hippy-dippy, very new-agey. It's bee. You know, from a bee's bathroom.
And well, I heard it was bee wax or some kind of honey wax.
What do you mean bee wax?
I mean honey wax. That's what I heard. 877-876-PHIL. Here is David in Queens, New York, listening to us on WWRL. Go ahead, David. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Bob Green.
I don't understand this guy. So what are you, man? You like a disgruntled businessman or something? Why are you bashing?
No, I just want to know, why is it? Why would you want to buy ice cream from
everybody who has been successful in those areas? Matter of fact, I have a ShamWow, and it works very good. It works very good.
I got
no chemicals and nothing in it. But I'm really representing. Those are good businessmen, you know, with good ideas. It sounds like you failed in your ideas as far as being a businessman. Why are you hating on these people who are keeping keeping the economy up? Actually, they are actually keeping the economy up.
I'm not hating. I'm not hating on them. I'm saying
it sounds like you're hating.
Are you believing? Can I ask you a question? Are you believing that Orville Redenbacher actually makes popcorn? I mean, how is that possible?
He found a better way to have it popped. He made it easier to pop. You know what I'm saying? First of all, I believe in God. And I believe a lot of those other people believe in God because they had a good idea and they used it to their ability. Now, whether it didn't work or not.
I don't know if it's God's work that a hula hoop. How many dead bodies are there? You know what?
Don't be so dramatic, Bob. You know, he's being very dramatic, and I don't think I appreciate that, to say that how many people got stepped on so the guy could make the hula hoop.
I'm asking this gentleman,
how many people are dead because of guns and drugs? How many people out there dead because of guns and drugs?
A lot.
How about that?
A lot of people.
How about that?
Talk about
that.
A lot of people. I agree with you. They
did not die from a hula hoop, and they did not die from popcorn getting stuck in their throat.
I will ask you this. How many people are dead out there because of Orville Redenbacher? I don't know.
Well, that's a hell of a thing to accuse a man of. And I'm going to tell you something else. That's an actionable thing to say that Orville Redenbacher is responsible for deaths.
I'm saying in the business world, Orville Redenbacher is stepping on people. How many guys died of a stroke?
And plus, sir. And then you're calling people who buy these projects degenerates. And I think that's also
a false thing.
You're calling me a degenerate. I brought the ShamWow. So what does that make me a degenerate? You understand what I'm saying?
I think you bought into the idea that a guy can come up with a rag and suddenly it's magic.
I bought into it. And
there's something missing upstairs.
With it.
Look, a ShamWow was made out of chamois. We all know what chamois is. And what they did is they took chamois and they turned it into an absorbent cloth. That's all.
Get a load of Henry pretending like
it's
he knows
what
it is.
Good idea, man.
Wait a minute.
It sounds like you had a bunch of good ideas that didn't work as well as theirs did. Ben and Jerry's, they're also some good guys, man. I mean, I love the ice cream, man.
They are.
They had a good idea.
Are they good?
They joined together.
Can I ask you a question? Do you want to have a stroke? Do you want bypass surgery?
It doesn't mean he's going to have bypass surgery because he likes their ice cream. One of the two guys, Ben, had bypass surgery. All right, so Ben's got bad health. Okay?
That's the message that Ben is sending to David and to all the young people of America. Go ahead and eat my ice cream and clog up an artery.
No, you know, everybody, what happens. Listen, man. It sounds like you hating on a lot of these manufacturers.
No,
out
sir.
There,
No, I'm not.
These people have some good ideas. They're using them. They're keeping the personal economy going. They are small businessmen who keep things going. So why not use your idea to keep these things going?
Right.
I don't understand why
I would rather not have.
Are your ideas not working for you? Not working for you?
My ideas will work for me once you know what.
What do you sell, sir? What do you sell? What do you make?
I am a grocer. I have grocery chain. Grocery store.
You got a grocery. So you got a 99-cent store then? That's what you're saying. You got a 99-cent store.
Only I sell food. Only I sell food.
So what?
So 99-cent food is better than the 99-cent store. Why?
Because that stuff that guy is selling, he pulled from a. God knows what, a nuclear reactor. I don't know what that
is. Sir,
it's garbage that he
found
in a basement.
All right.
Sir.
Exactly. I got to take a break. David, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL as we talk with Robert Green of Fraser Foods about his book called The Cheap Way to the Top and what he says are overnight success stories that he doesn't trust. Orville Redenbacher, and how many dead bodies litter the road to success for hula hoop? 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Go ahead and laugh. Good man out there.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. Coming up next hour is Dr. Ron Tarner on a very controversial statement made last week by Dr. Stephen Hawking that God did not create the universe. God did not create the universe. Gravity created the universe. We'll talk to Dr. Ron Tarner next hour about that. 877-876-PHIL. With me is Bob Green, the author of The Cheap Way to the Top, how overnight success reflects the degenerate mindset of the inventor as well as the customer. Now, Bob, you were just talking to me about the Foreman grill. That's another example of what you call cheap overnight money, right?
Absolutely, Phil.
Tell me about that.
Well, the Foreman grill is one of these products that has captured the imagination of the average person because of the celebrity of George Foreman combined with our love of hamburgers, and it seems like that should be a good idea. It's not. It's a cheap product that I bought one because I, for the first time in my life, I wanted to have faith in the American entrepreneur, and I almost set fire to my home, I'll have you know.
Are you saying it's not safe?
It was not safe in my home, and supposedly it's easy. They say you can put two hamburgers in there. I don't know anyone that's been able to figure it out, not a soul. And meanwhile, George Foreman is laughing all the way to the, like he hasn't already laughed all the way to the bank. George Foreman has laughed all the way to the bank just about every year of his life since he started fighting.
877-876-PHIL. We're talking to Robert Green here about building a business long-term as opposed to the, quote, overnight successes of Ben & Jerry's, Orville Redenbacher, and the products that Billy Mays sells or sold, God rest his soul, and Slinky and Hula Hoop. Here is Diana in Brooklyn, New York. Go ahead, Diana. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you.
Yes.
I would concur with some of this gentleman's assessment, but however, Burt's Bees are phenomenal products. I love them. I use them. They really, you know what's in regular chapstick? It's nothing but petroleum from the ground. It's oil that you put in your car. So chapstick is no better.
Right.
But that's been on the market
for
years.
Yeah, but you're wiping bee crap on
your lips.
Oh, come
on. You have to use it. Burt's Bees products are great, okay? The other thing is the hula hoop. The hula hoop is phenomenal. The hula hoop's great. It gets great exercise. It gives you fun. It gives you great exercise. So those are two products I think you're wrong about.
Those are products. Well, the hula hoop, for starters, great exercise, huh?
It's great. I love it. It keeps you in shape.
Let me ask you, have you talked to anyone who's slipped a disc using one of those?
Nah,
or otherwise
that's when you're
been
out of
paralyzed,
shape.
Paralyzed from the waist down?
Oh, come
you know, man,
that's ridiculous. ridiculous. The hula hoop's fun. It's great. Every kid loves it. I could hula hoop for 20 minutes. Oh, man, that's when you're
out of shape. The man that developed the hula hoop, I would ask you again, how many men died of heart attacks and strokes because that guy stepped on them on his way to the top?
What?
And the same goes with Bert. How many men and women were elbowed out of the way and pushed into life's ditch by the guy that developed that hula hoop? And Burt's Bees is the same thing. See, you tell me about how great it is. It came out of a bee's rear end.
Oh, I love it.
You know what? You're wrong. You're wrong about that. You're wrong. It's honey wax.
Yes.
Okay?
That's right.
Oh, she doesn't know. All she knows is she's been wiping it on her mouth for years.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, I bet it is.
All right. Thank you very much, Diana.
You know, I'm insulted by the fact that you two think it's very funny. When I say that Ben and Jerry's is sold by a man that's had bypass surgery, Burt's Bees is sold by some guy that sleeps in a garage or something and pulls this stuff out of a bee's ass.
Well, we got a break. We got to go.
Yeah, swell.
Sorry, Bob, but we will tell people to buy your book. What is it called? The Cheap Way to the Top?
Yeah, whatever.
Thank you. Phil Hendry Show. Coming up next, Dr. Ron Tarner.
Phil Hendry.
The hell with you.
Phil Hendry.
Powerful interests who have been dominating the agenda in Washington.
And I do want to apologize.
That means that the dollar in you is a hoax. It's
what he's initially charged with, the defalony reference.
Must drown government like a baby.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Taking your ass to the very edge of reality since 1990. Where truth is our bitch, and a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, man. We'll take you wherever we need to take you to get you to wherever you need to be. In other words, what we're here for primarily is to entertain and to, enlighten and all of that other stuff. But be that as it may, we have Dr. Ron Tarner with us. Let me just let Dr. Tarner do the talking here this hour. And we're going to discuss the statement made last week that was a little bit under the radar, but I think people have had time to digest it now, by Professor Stephen Hawking. And Professor Hawking, an eminent man, and a man who comes up quite a bit in conversations we have with Ron Tarner. Dr. Hawking is a British physicist, a theoretical physicist, an eminent man, as you probably know. He suffers from ALS, what some people call Lou Gehrig's disease. The actual pronunciation of this disease is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which paralyzes the body. He also has neuromuscular dystrophy. So this man is a terrible physical maladies have afflicted him. But nonetheless, he's written books. Recently, as 1998, he wrote a book called A Brief History of Time. And since then, he has written a great many books. The Grand Design is due to go on sale next week. He has been the host of a television show on the universe and so on and so forth. He made a statement last week in which he said God did not create the universe and the Big Bang was an inevitable consequence of the laws of physics. God did not create the universe. The Big Bang was the inevitable consequence of the laws of physics. In The Grand Design, co-authored with U.S. physicist Leonard Maldonado, Hawking says a new series of theories made a creator of the universe redundant, according to the Times newspaper, which published extracts on Thursday. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. It is why the universe exists. It is why we exist, wrote Stephen Hawking. So there's a lot there that I suppose, you know, all of us might feel a little bit reluctant to challenge a man as eminent as Dr. Stephen Hawking on something like that. But Dr. Ron Tarner, who was a astronomer and is himself a physicist from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado, joins us. And here again is Dr. Stephen Hawking saying something controversial, Ron, and What do you think the world thinks today? I mean, you know, you're very right when you say that people admire Dr. Hawking. They've consumed his books. They've watched the television shows that he has been the host of. He's been to physics and to the laws of science like what Carl Sagan was to astronomy, don't you think?
Oh, well, I don't know. I think that's giving Stephen Hawking a little more credit than Carl Sagan was a masterful teacher. Carl Sagan, I knew Carl Sagan, and he was a great teacher, a great writer, a great communicator. Stephen Hawking is a man of controversy. He courts controversy, I think, the way some men chase women. Some people like to go to the horse races. Stephen Hawking, I think, has been able to, parlay what has been a very, very unfortunate life in terms of his physical condition, as you mentioned, Bill, but he's been able to parlay that into a certain sympathy admiration, which I, at times, I understand, and I do not deny the brilliance of the man, but what I do deny is that he's the only brilliant man. Now,
I have to interrupt to say, You've been on record on this show as saying that Stephen Hawking, you don't like him.
I don't. That's very strong to say that. It's not that I don't like him. I don't like how he has turned into a celebrity by using his physical condition married to these brilliant ideas of extraterrestrial aliens and there is no God. So he uses the fact that he's in this wheelchair, and then he says something like there's no God, and then he lets the press report on the fact that he's been dating two or three different women in the same week, and he becomes a larger-than-life character that I find frustrating, because the rest of us sit here waiting for the phone to ring.
All right. So, you know, Stephen Hawking has a lot of celebrity. He has a lot of people that recognize his brilliance. And you and other scientists like you don't get that kind of recognition because you're not in a wheelchair. And
no, it's not because I'm not in a wheelchair. It's because that Hawking has somehow taken the fact that he's got Lou Gehrig's disease and he has turned that into, because I have Lou Gehrig's disease, I'm Albert Einstein. I don't know how he did it. I don't know when it started. I don't know when we began to believe that he was Albert Einstein just because he went out and spent a pretty significant amount of money on that wheelchair and has had several girlfriends and has been seen in certain nightclubs. And
well, I mean, the man's going to have you know, there's going to be groupies. But what has this got to do, you know, with what he said?
Well, what do you mean the man's going to have groupies? Here's a guy, he's run through more girlfriends, but I understand that's neither here nor there.
What has that got to do with what he said about God did not create the universe?
All right, here is, finally, people are going to understand what I've been saying about Stephen Hawking. This man, his ego is so enormous that he feels he can say that God basically doesn't exist. And Stephen Hawking is saying, I dare you to hate me. You can't hate me, because to hate Stephen Hawking is to hate, if I could use a parable, Phil, or perhaps a comparison in culture, to hate Stephen Hawking is to hate Tiny Tim. To hate Stephen Hawking is to hate the, you know, the little crippled, you know what I mean, right?
Well, I mean, are you saying there's a sympathy vote for Stephen Hawking that would even deny someone their feelings, their opinions?
I think yes. I think that people are so in love with this guy that even a devout fundamentalist Christian, if Stephen Hawking said God didn't invent the universe, Billy Graham would keep his mouth shut. Boy, I'll tell you, that's too much power for one man to have. And I find it to be unsettling. I find it to be troubling. I find it to be dishonest.
Do you disagree with him? Let's get right down to that. When Stephen Hawking says that God did not create the universe, that the universe was the inevitable consequence of gravity, do you disagree? Now, hold on before you answer the question here, Dr. Tarner. I just want to ask you, do you disagree with the idea that, I'm trying to read a note here. I don't know what it is he's trying to tell me here. I guess nothing.
What are you saying?
Do you disagree with him?
Do I disagree with Stephen Hawking?
Yeah.
No, I don't disagree with Stephen Hawking because I said the exact same thing 8 months ago. I wrote the exact same thing in a paper that I did for North American Physics, and I wrote the same thing. So I said the exact same thing, and all that did was get me criticism, and it got me uninvited to two lectures, a lecture series I was going to do at the University of Chicago. But Stephen Hawking says it.
So you also agree that God didn't create the universe?
Yes, but it doesn't matter what I think, because I've been uninvited to two lecture series. Stephen Hawking says it, and he may have two more girlfriends by the end of this week. He may have his own television show by the end of this week. There might be something else that this guy will be offered in order for us to further, I'm telling you.
So it's frustrating for you, huh? All right.
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating for me because Hawking has said that God doesn't exist. Everyone is kissing his blank blank. And when I said the same thing 8 months ago, I'm almost out of a job. How does that happen? Why? Because he's in a wheelchair?
Well, again, I mean, his reputation precedes itself. He is a great thinker.
All right, he's a great thinker, but I said it before he did. So why are people focusing on him and not what I said?
I guess people are going to pay more attention to what Stephen Hawking...
There, you said it. Don't say any more. You said it. People are going to pay more attention to what Stephen Hawking says than what Ron Tarter says. Why is that?
Because people know him better.
Yeah. Why do they know him better? Because he's in a wheelchair.
Well, I don't think...
No, that's exactly it. Because he's in a wheelchair. Because he went out and bought a state-of-the-art wheelchair that he shows off, that he thinks... You've got to see him at some of these seminars.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Stephen Hawking said that God did not create the universe. Gravity did. And people, are going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Ron Tarner said the exact same thing 8 months ago, and he is almost out of his job at the observatory, and he's been uninvited to a variety of seminars. And the hypocrisy, he thinks, is the result of people are more willing to believe Stephen Hawking because he's in a wheelchair and Ron Tarner isn't. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Talking with Dr. Ron Tarner here tonight, and again, we're talking about Dr. Stephen Hawking, who has been in the news for over a week in making a statement last week. Actually, it was a statement released, or it was a quote released from a book that he has co-authored, a book that is entitled The Grand Design, in which he says, God did not create the universe. And Stephen Hawking is a theoretical physicist. Don't you think it's pretty de rigueur, Dr. Tarner, for a scientist to say, well, God doesn't exist?
Oh, it may well be, Phil, but Stephen Hawking is the MC and the host of, he has hosted television shows. Stephen Hawking has MC'd different charity events. Stephen Hawking is a popular figure on the lecture circuit. Stephen Hawking is a popular figure among writers and the books that people like to read. Here is a man who is a theoretical physicist whose name is known even by the common man. And Stephen Hawking now has grown so big, he has got so
huge that he can say there's no God and nobody dare challenge him. Well, I am challenging him, and I have been challenging him for a number of years because I'm not afraid of him. I've been dogging Stephen Hawking for the last 20 years because I know what he is. I know how slippery he is. I know how he has
You think that he's a bad man?
I don't think he's a bad man. I don't think Stephen Hawking's a bad man. He's an atheist. He's an atheist.
And but you're an atheist, too.
It doesn't matter. I'm an atheist, but I'm not exactly out here advertising that I'm an atheist. I'll tell you why. I may be an atheist, but Stephen Hawking being an atheist is a bad thing because that is something that young people will be influenced by. And I think I need to let people know that he's an atheist because parents will then say, I don't want you listening to this man in an electric wheelchair because I think it's destructive for you to listen to Stephen Hawking. He's an atheist.
But you're an atheist. Well, the point that I'm making here is you're also an atheist. You also agree that God did not create the universe.
What I asked you before we went on the air, what I asked your producer, it doesn't make any difference if I would rather you not say that I'm an atheist. I'll tell you why. I don't think being an atheist is a good thing. I hate atheists.
I'm sorry, but...
You're going back...
No. Hold on for a minute. You can't say you're an atheist and then say that you hate atheists.
When I found out what Stephen Hawking said, I need people to know that I hate that.
And so you're going to hate what Stephen Hawking said because you want to just bring him down?
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want. If he's an atheist, then you hate atheists. Are you still an atheist?
You're really confusing things.
No, I'm not. You said you're an atheist, but now that Stephen Hawking's an atheist.
Stephen Hawking said God did not create the universe. Stephen Hawking, you're making this about me. This is not about me.
Well, all right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL is our number in the Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL. I got Ron Turner here, and we're going to get to some of your phone calls in a minute, but I want to clear this up. You know, it's about Stephen Hawking. I understand that. But you said you're an atheist.
I am an atheist.
You believe that God did not create the universe.
That is right.
But you feel now that Stephen Hawking has said that's bad.
This is an opportunity for people to see how slippery this guy is. Yes, I'm an atheist. Do I agree with him? I agree with him, but I think it's bad. I want people, and especially young people and parents, to know that what he said is bad. That Stephen Hawking, who hosts television show, how clear do I have to be, Phil? Television.
I know what that is, Ron, and you don't have to make it. I understand that television is an extremely influential medium, and that he is on TV. He's written a lot of books. Okay, and the fact that he's in his wheelchair, you think, makes him a very sympathetic figure. I get that. But the fact remains that you agree with him, but you're ready to tear him down and your own belief system down just so people will not like Stephen Hawking.
And the reason why I don't want people to like Stephen Hawking is because he's a phony baloney. He's a phony baloney. The things that he says, like God didn't create the universe, have gotten lesser men fired from their jobs. The books that he writes, the big deal that he thinks he is with his wheelchair and his girlfriends, all of this amounts to, in my opinion, a man who has gotten far, far too big for what he's able to do. First of all, he can't really do anything other than sit and stare. But he makes these comments that somehow get turned into books, that somehow get turned into songs, that somehow suddenly become symphony orchestras. And to hear him, you hear the guy talk, it sounds like an electronic band.
And I know, but none of this stuff has anything to do. You have a personal problem with him. And your personal problem with Stephen Hawking isn't because he's an atheist, because you're also an atheist. Your personal problem with Stephen Hawking isn't because he's a theoretical physicist, because you yourself engage in it. You don't really disagree with anything that he has to say, and yet you want to publicly tear the man down. And my question for you, as it has always been, Dr. Turner, is why?
Because no one who's in his condition should have the social life that he has. I'm not saying he shouldn't be happy.
Why not?
Why? How is it that he has...
Is it about the number of girlfriends he's got?
Mr. Henry?
Is it about the number of girlfriends that he has?
There's a lot of that, yes. It's the fact that I work very hard, and so do a lot of other scientists. Stephen Hawking has a Twitter account, and he talks about watching Rosie O'Donnell, and he's making these jokes about hip-hop music, and he's in a hoverround, and he's got girlfriends. Where is the justice in that? When I'm sitting here at night, and I can't make the words come out of my mouth the way I want them to.
What are you trying to say here, man? You're telling me that this man, this poor, unfortunate man, has had a difficult life, and yet he's been able to make a life for himself. He's got a social life. He's got a Twitter account. You know, so he follows hip-hop music, so he watches Rosie O'Donnell. And these are all things that you don't like because he's got more girlfriends than you do.
You've seen me, right?
Yes.
Do I look like I shouldn't have girlfriends?
No. You're a normal guy.
Well, if I'm a normal-looking guy, then why is it Hawking? If you saw that last woman he was with, that blonde, that thing, that was built like something else, you know. And I guess I'm not making myself as clear as I could, but I wish that you would see past my nervousness.
Hold on for a minute, Ron.
What's that?
Hold on for just a minute. 877-876-PHIL. Ron Turner on Dr. Stephen Hawking having more girlfriends than him. We'll be back in the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Stephen Hawking last week, in a book that he has written, the statement was released from that book as part of, I'm sure, the press for the book. God did not create the universe. The universe was created by gravity. With me is Dr. Ron Turner, who is an astronomer at the Mountain Meadow Observatory. All right, when we were last talking, you were talking about notoriety, and we're going to go to some phone calls here in a moment, 877-876-PHIL. But what were you saying about Mel Gibson?
Well, I was saying, Phil, that Mel, you were going on about how I'm an atheist, and so if I agree with Stephen Hawking, that I'm a hypocrite for criticizing. I'm simply asking you this.
I didn't call you a hypocrite. You know.
Well, I'm asking you this. Mel Gibson turns on a woman, and people hate him, and Tiger Woods cheats on his wife, and people hate him. Stephen Hawking says there's no God, and we are still genuflecting at the base of his wheelchair, and we think he's brilliant. Now, why is that? Why is that? There's no answer, is there?
I think it's because with a Stephen Hawking, we see his contribution as being more significant than playing golf or being an actor.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm saying that with a Stephen Hawking, the American, the world may be more forgiving of him, given the fact that he's a scientist, which we see as a far more valuable contribution to man's journey on this planet than acting or playing golf. Okay?
Yeah, but he can't move without moving a lever with his chin.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's not worth it as a human being. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. Ken in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ken, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Turner. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil. I'm glad to be on the radio with you. I just don't get this guy, Professor Ron. He seems to think that being in a wheelchair is...
Are you in a wheelchair?
He thinks Stephen Hawking's the wheelchair is
First of all, let's ask you what you know about Stephen Hawking, which I think is probably nothing, right?
Well, I mean, Stephen Hawking's is the
That's not even his name. It's Hawking, not Hawking's. That's what I mean, Phil.
Oh yeah, Stephen Hawking. Okay, Stephen Hawking. He's the gentleman. Okay, and I use that word gentleman who came up with the theory of the black hole. Okay, I mean this is a major contribution.
No, he didn't.
Was it Professor Ron?
Well,
yes, he did.
He wasn't the only one.
All right. Well, he was one of them.
Well, what's the word?
My point is simply that you seem to be jealous of Stephen Hawking as opposed to, being
jealous.
A compatriot.
No. I want to ask you why he gets to say there's no God and nobody says anything, but Mel Gibson gets to rip into some Russian. He gets to throw a punch at a baby.
Well, why does he get to say it? Is that the question?
Yeah,
Why is
Stephen Hawking an atheist and everyone still kissing his, excuse me for saying this, paralyzed rear end?
Oh boy!
Yeah, it's a straight. I just don't understand.
No, I'm asking you.
You asked me a question.
Yeah.
Okay. He gets to say it because he's an American who can say his opinion.
No, he's not.
Just like you get to say your opinion.
He's British.
The atheist who doesn't like atheists. I mean, it's like I think I'm in the Twilight Zone when
professor. What I'm talking about is this guy says there's no God, which you know as well as I do. Americans believe in God, but they let him have a pass because he's moving himself around the room by pushing a stick with his chin.
That's ridiculous.
That's why,
that's
huh?
Ridiculous. And not every American believes in God. You know, you had deists, founders of the Constitution. Some of them were deists and things like that. I mean, I don't get your
We've got a church in Florida getting ready to burn Korans, and there are worldwide protests. Hawking says God doesn't exist, and we're gutless. I'll tell you this much. I'm glad that I'm speaking up.
All right, look at Ken, thank you very much for making an effort anyway. 877-876-PHIL.
What does that mean, making an effort?
Because I think what the man is trying to determine here is, are you jealous? You know.
No, I'm not jealous. I'm trying to find out. I'm not trying to find out anything. I'm telling people that if people are gutless, I'll go ahead and I will lead the charge against Stephen Hawking, and I will say the things that need to be said. I'll say that he is an atheist. I'll say that he is polluting the very minds of our young people as he moves himself around the room, pushing a stick with his chin.
You cannot go a few minutes without knocking this guy and the ailment that this poor man suffers. What is it with you?
What are you talking about?
Everything with pushing a stick with his chin, the hover-around, the big money hover-around deal that you were talking about, last week. You know, you're saying genuflecting at his little electric wheelchair every time you open your mouth about this guy.
Because I don't understand how it is that people don't see they're kissing a cripple's ass.
All right, that's I got to hang up.
Yeah. See, that's the hypocrisy.
No, when you said that,
you hang up on him?
Yes, I did. Kissing a cripple's ass.
What did he say?
I'm not going to say it any louder than he said it. All right. Thank you very much to Dr. Ron Tarner, and certainly we will look forward to whatever you have to say on the subject, Dr. Tarner. You're an atheist, too. You agree with Hawking. You just don't like kissing a you-know-what's ass. 877-876-PHIL. Do you live in the most stressful city in the country? I think I do, or close to it. We'll find out what those are when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry.
Well, I don't know that anything else is right on this list, so don't be telling me something that... Anyway, welcome back here. We've got a list of the most stressful cities in America, and the reason why I was saying what I was saying there is because next to each city, I think we have the right call letters of our affiliate, but I'm not sure, so therefore I will refrain from mentioning the call letters here. Because it looks to me like somebody gave a list to me that belongs to, I don't know, Laura Ingram or something?
Yeah. On account of she's on KRLA, and we're...
All right, you don't have to blather it. Anyway, the top 10 most stressful cities in America, especially tonight. No, I'm kidding. Well, Detroit is number one. Detroit, Michigan, the most stressful city in America. Now, we're going to tell you why Detroit, L.A., and Cleveland are 1, 2, and 3. Cleveland, number 3. L.A., number 2. L.A., number 2 in a lot of things, as a matter of fact. L.A. is the new second city. Chicago's third place in just about everything except for this. They're 8th. Detroit has a lot of things going against it, says Portfolio.com editor James Moss. So this is something from Portfolio.com. So again, keep in mind the source, Portfolio.com. Who are they? I got no idea. It's a national business and news website for small business executives looking at unemployment rates, personal finance data, environment, health, and living standards, and crime rates to compile the ranking of 50 cities. But I don't think that that's what they do. I think this is just a poll that they put together. Detroit has a lot of things going against it. It topped nearly all of our standards for our stress test, although it was rarely number one, said Portfolio.com editor James Moss. Riverside in California and St. Louis in Mizzou rounded out the top five stressful cities. Riverside, man, out there in the Inland Empire.
Weren't you just there?
I was in Palm Springs, but I passed through Riverside.
Well, was it stressful?
Yeah. Yes, it was very stressful driving through Riverside, but once I got through it, then I got to Palm Springs. It'd be funny if Palm Springs was like number one. And then the number sixth most stressful city, guess what? New York. Number seven, the most stressful city is New Orleans. Number eight, Chicago. Number nine, Birmingham, Alabama. And number 10, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. How is it that a city the size of a Birmingham and a city the size of a Riverside, and when I say the size of, I know that Riverside and San Bernardino, that's kind of a large growth area, and Birmingham may be the same, but you rarely see cities of such disparate sizes lumped in with other cities, lumped together, I should say, unless it's something negative, you know.
Yeah, I would say, like, where's the number one, like, who has all the handguns, you know, be like number one Akron, Ohio, number two New York, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. Who has the most, where are the most handgun deaths? Well, number one, Bozeman, Montana, number two, Dallas, Texas. Detroit has been plagued with high unemployment, a really distressed housing market, and is burdened with high crime. It doesn't really seem like it has much hope, said Moss. Boy, that's rough. That's rough. He added that I remember when Detroit was, well, it was Motor City. When I was growing up, Detroit was where the cars were made. It was where Berry Gordy had Motown Records, when you had the Supremes and you had the Four Tops. All kinds of great music was coming out of Detroit. You had the Detroit Tigers. You had Mickey Lolich and Denny McLean, and you had the whole thing, man. It was beautiful, you know.
Yeah, and then they had all that smoke coming up from just behind the center field fence.
Right, all the smoke coming up from behind the center. What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about the riots.
I'm talking about before that. All the smoke coming up behind the center field fence.
What's that?
They had a riot in Detroit, man. They had riots all over this country. It was a bloody mess. He added that the list was done using statistical data analysis rather than interviews with local residents about their levels of stress. We didn't interview residents. People will always have some civic pride that could counter statistical figures. God forbid we should have anybody say anything good about these cities. No, we just wanted all the negative stuff, he said. New York City captured the number six spot, followed by Nolens, Chicago, Birmingham, and Miami, Fort Lauderdale. At the other end of the scale, Salt Lake City was ranked as the least stressful city, thanks to its low crime rate, high health standing, and unemployment. Least stressful if you don't drink. If you drink, it is one of the most stressful cities in the history of... No, I'm kidding. No, it isn't.
You drank there, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I drank there.
What's that? Are you allowed to drink there?
Of course you're allowed to drink there.
You're kidding me.
No, you can drink in Salt Lake City.
Well, how come they can do that?
What do you mean, how come they can do? You can drink in Salt Lake City. The thing that you can't do in Salt Lake City is you can't order a beer and a shot. You know what I'm saying about, you know what I mean?
Uh-uh.
In other words, in California, let's say, most cities, you say like a beer and a shot. You want to get a beer and you want to get a, you know, whatever.
Like a Bushmills or something.
All right, a Bushmills. In Salt Lake City, they won't let you do that. However, in Salt Lake City, they have marvelous waiters and waitresses who recognize the futility of this kind of law. So they'll say, so they always counsel people that are in from out of town, and they'll say, okay, what would you like? Well, I think I'd like a beer and a shot. All right, here's what you do. Order the beer, and then tell me that 2 seconds later you'd like the shot. So you can't order it in the same...
Oh, you can't get the same, like in the same order?
Like the same order, yeah. Like if in one order, a beer. Oh, would you like anything else, sir? Oh, yeah, I'd like a shot.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, how do you...
Well, you just, they know what you mean.
Yeah, so you go like, I want to have a beer, and then like 2 seconds later, I want to have a shot.
Yeah, so as long as it doesn't sound like it's in the same order.
Yeah, but you're going to come by with a beer and have a shot, and then doesn't the police see it?
I don't know, man, but I would love to meet the cop that's going to go cruising through a... Hey, wait a minute, there's a beer and a shot on the table. I don't know. I don't know, but that's what we did, and I don't know why we're even talking about this.
You're talking about how stressful it was in Salt Lake City on account of the drinking.
You know, I'm just being an idiot. Virginia Beach in Virginia and Minneapolis-St. Paul also scored high for their low stress living. Moss said he hoped the list would be helpful to both employees, employers, and those without jobs. So in other words, if you're a business and you're struggling and you have as your headquarters Detroit, good luck attracting young talent because this list just came out saying that Detroit sucks. Hey, have you thought about this one, Portfolio.com, that publishing a list like this doesn't exactly engender interest in developing business in Detroit or Los Angeles or Cleveland or anything like that? I don't know. I believe that there are a couple of different people who could look at this, says Mr. Moss. For a small business person or entrepreneur, for example, or for most people that want to start a business, the common belief is that less stress leads to happier employers and happier customers and hopefully a bigger payout. Employees looking for a job would also go to a place where they would be less stressed. No kidding. Other less stressful cities, Raleigh in North Carolina, Austin in Tejas, Denver, San Antone, and Kansas City. Those are all less stressful towns. Kansas City, stressful if you're a steer. All right.
What are you talking about?
Kidding around. So that was the list there, and that's... But again, I don't believe that it does much good for a poll like this. If I want to bring business into Detroit, if I'm trying desperately to get business back into the city of Detroit, and I don't know what the hell they're going to do, I honestly don't. I mean, look, if we ever learn how to make an automobile again, like real human beings... But beyond that, I don't know. Perhaps Detroit. There was a time in the 70s we talked about the Rust Belt. Cleveland, Akron, Ohio, Pittsburgh. This was the Rust Belt. Well, what happened? Well, Pittsburgh reinvented itself as a high-tech city. Akron, Ohio stopped making rubber tires, but now Akron has the Polymer Institute where they are... they have Akron University and the Polymer Institute where they're involved in the development of alternative synthetic materials to use in manufacturing. And Cleveland set about cleaning up Lake Erie, a lake that literally caught on fire. It was so polluted.
Oh, man, you're kidding.
What, how did that happen?
I don't know, but Lake Erie just one day spontaneously caught on fire.
Well, I mean, like, how did that happen? What did they do?
I don't know. There was just so much pollutant in that lake. And you'd have to look this up, man, but there was so much pollutant in Lake Erie that it caught on fire. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. It caught on fire, and it was just filthy. And Cleveland was just, it was like, it was over, man. I mean, that freaking town was over. And somehow Cleveland fought its way back. They cleaned up that lake. As a matter of fact, Lake Erie at one point, many, many decades ago, Lake Erie was a place where you could go out and you could fish on Lake Erie and catch, you know, some, have a good day fishing. And then it got so freaking polluted that it caught on fire, and now they've brought it back to the point where it's now a great sportsman destination.
People go fishing there.
Yeah, people can fish there. And they've got a new marina in Cleveland. So I don't know. I'd have to look into it. I almost went to work in Akron, Ohio many, many years ago. And then I realized that it wasn't Cleveland, and so I said, lucky me. No, I didn't say that, but I didn't take the job.
Where were you?
Ventura. That would have been a lateral move. All right. In other news, U.S. church to go ahead with September 11th Quran burning. Now, this is an idea that some guy in Gainesville, Florida, a Christian minister in Gainesville, Florida, Pastor Terry Jones, he came up with this brainstorm on September the 11th. This guy wants to burn copies of the Quran to protest the September 11th terrorist attacks, despite warnings from the White House and top U.S. general in Afghanistan that he would endanger American troops overseas. God, man, I mean, don't you think that would be enough? You know, if you wouldn't mind. No, I'm sorry, but I have to go forward with this. You're going to get people killed. No, I don't even believe you're telling me the truth. Yeah, that's right. You're right. I forgot about the government conspiracy thing. Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center, which has about 50 members, that's what it says here, 50 members, said he understands the government's concerns but doesn't give a crap because he's an egotistical, megalomaniacal jackass, and he's going to burn on Saturday the Qurans marking the 9th anniversary of the attacks. Being a Christian minister doesn't necessarily mean you're a Christian, said Terry. Most often it means you're a frustrated actor. Well, that's me. I should have been on stage in New York. And since they didn't see my genius and my talent and my agent told me that he didn't want to handle me anymore, I've decided to get the world's attention on me this way by getting men killed burning Qurans. I'm just joking. He didn't say that.
I knew he didn't say that, man. I didn't see none of that in that article.
I just thought I'd make that up. He left the door open to change his mind. What are you looking at?
What are we talking about? Was that in there?
No, it wasn't in there. I'm joking.
He was joking.
Oh, because I'm listening. I'm going, oh, wow, that guy's really an idiot.
I'm joking, but he didn't say it. But we do have some audio here that I'd like to give to you as a special, just as a special going home present here, folks. Here is Pastor Terry Jones explaining the point of his demonstration. And he was explaining this on MSNBC today, so that must have been fun.
Well, we have declared September the 11th, International Burn a Quran Day. We want to send a very clear message. We want to remember those who were murdered and killed at 9/11. And we also want to send a very clear message to radical Islam. We see that all over the world. We see that all over Europe. We want to send a very clear message to them, to Muslims, that if they are in America, they are free here to worship, but they must honor and respect our Constitution. We want to send a very clear message that we do not want Sharia law and Sharia courts. That is what our International Burn a Quran Day is about.
No, it's actually what it's about is about Terry Jones and getting people for his Dove Bar World Outreach thing. Coming back next hour on a world-famous Phil Hendry show with Morrissey calling the Chinese a subspecies.
All right. Hey.
Very interesting. Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
That means that the dollar in use is a hoax. It's a fraud.
We are taking the general's words very, very serious.
What he's initially charged with, the defalony reckless endangerment.
Epic fail.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, taking your ass to the edge of reality since 1990, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and we take you through the looking glass every night to that. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, a number here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We thank Dr. Ron Tarner for joining us this evening, as well as Bob Green. And we are in our news hour here. I got Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard along the way here. And somebody just sent me a picture of Gary Ridgway. Who did that?
I did, because you said you wanted to see the dead eye.
Yeah, you were talking about that.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to Rance about the... Why were we talking about that?
I don't know. There's something in the news. And then he said, he had a dead eye.
Dead eyes, Bud. I think I pluralized it. Gary Ridgway, yeah. And I'm looking actually at a website called Fine Art Gallery, and in it they have pictures of all of the people that have been responsible for mass murders. All right. What the hell website is this, man?
I don't know. It's a place I found out about.
It looked like they got all the pictures of, like, who that guy, the Chinaman.
What do you mean the Chinaman? Don't say Chinaman. How many times I told you not to say Chinaman?
I'm sorry. I mean the guy that did the Virginia Tech.
The Virginia Tech guy, yeah. Gary Ridgway was a psychopath, man. You look at that guy's kisser, there ain't nothing there. He's got these eyeballs that are, it's sheer death. That kid, that Asian kid from the Virginia Tech killings, he's another one. Oh, here's a picture of Hitler. Here's another. What the hell is this? Precision ancient Minoan fresco art restorations. Get out of here, will you? I don't know. You guys go to some of the weirdest websites. The Minoans of Crete and Thera. Anyway, U.S. Church to go ahead with September 11th Quran burning. So I just wanted to finish this up before we move on. And as we move on, you know, coming up on Saturday is the anniversary, the ninth anniversary of 9/11. So there'll be more and more of these stories coming out. There's a documentary on Channel 4 BBC, England, UK, that concerns the hours following the 9/11 attack. And as we get further away from any historic event and the reporting becomes more clear-eyed and a little less emotional and a little less tinged with a political bias and ideologic slant, suddenly, it's an interesting thing about events. They just, you can't hide the facts forever. And this idea that President Bush was some kind of a coward that was popularized by Michael Moore, who is just one big, fat, moving agenda, we now find this was not the case at all. Of course, it is Condoleezza Rice weighing in, and she must be lying, right? Okay. But Michael Moore is just one quivering, blubbering ball of agenda, man, you know?
What do you mean?
I mean, the guy is, you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're talking about the guy, he's just a big ball of agenda.
Right. Anyway, U.S. Church to go ahead. So I was playing this audio of this jackball, so let's finish up, okay? This is the preacher. His name is Terry Jones, and he is doing this. He's not doing this because he cares about Islam. He's not doing this because he cares about America. He's not doing this because he cares about anything other than packing those seats so we can get the contributions up on Sunday. So, what the hell is that, man? Turn that off, bud. I don't need music underlying this. Or maybe we do. I don't know. Get me something like, as a matter of fact, if I've got to listen to this guy, we might as well have something that I think was, give me the Indiana Jones theme. There you go. Here we go. Here is Terry Jones.
We are taking the general's words very, very serious. We are continuing to pray about the action on September the 11th. We are indeed very concerned about it.
It's just that we
don't know. I mean, how long do we back down? When does America stand for truth? I mean, instead of us being blamed for what other people will do or might do, why don't we send a warning to them? Why don't we send a warning to radical Islam and say, look, don't do it?
Right. But as long as we're talking about you, Terry, let's just get some American soldiers killed. I mean, when do we do this? Get yourself a few American soldiers killed, and then on Fox Television Orlando, CARE Florida President Raheed Mahdi speaks out against the burning.
He has the right to do so in the First Amendment. And the First Amendment, we're not denying that right. But is it the right thing to do? Is it moral? Is it the Christian thing to do? What is this message fit of Christianity? Jesus love you. Is Jesus love you is to burn a book, a holy book of a whole Islam? I think this is inappropriate.
Anyway, so that's what they're saying down there in Orlando, Florida. Jones gained some local notoriety last year when he posted signs in front of his small church proclaiming Islam is the devil. Orlando, Florida, this is Gainesville, Florida, right? Is it Orlando or Gainesville? What I'm finding out about this part of Florida, shall we say, is I don't know, you know, like there are some areas that grow corn and some areas that have like Silicon Valley, and there's some places that are good fishing areas. Central Florida is great for preachers. Man, they got all kinds. And all those cats down there are competing with each other, you know, to get people.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them have TV shows too, don't they?
Some of them have TV shows.
Like those two guys you were telling me about.
Well, that was an interesting story. I said there was two preachers down in Orlando And one of them had an affair with the other guy's wife, and the other guy found out about it, and the other guy got arrested because he had a hit put out on the other guy. I mean, these are preachers. You know, at some point you're going to say, look, you guys have got problems, and I certainly understand that life is difficult, but preacher, you ain't. I ain't going to your church. So Central Florida is known for this, and they've got an abundance of them. So I guess these guys have got to do what they got to do to get people in the front door, right? I don't ever believe any of this stuff. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? This is what I mean. When a guy says, I'm burning the Quran because I really care that Islam is really hurting America, I don't believe him for a second. Nobody can be that stupid. No one can be that stupid. No one can be that stupid and get that kind of press. I'm going to burn the Quran on September the 11th. What is the message? Because Islam sucks. The whole religion is just a piece of crap. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe all of Christianity is crap. I would rather not go there, if you don't mind. I'd rather not just get into that debate. I'd rather just, whatever, do whatever, you know. That's between you guys. You don't tell me, man. If some Christian dude is burning the Quran, or if some Muslim dude is burning the Bible, that's just the clash of egos in those two religions. That's just holy man versus holy man. And I think it's a disgrace, but it ain't nothing. I got nothing to do with me. So that jackass down there, that Jones, hey, man, you can talk, whoever it is you're talking to, it ain't me, all right? You're talking to all the holy men on your block, and you're talking to the other holy men there in the Muslim faith, and maybe a few rabbis, too, and you guys are just, if you'll pardon the expression, you're whipping it out and comparing sizes to see who's, you know, who's going to be staying on the street longer. So he's going to burn his Quran, and that's where that's at. Now, the only problem is, it has it's leaked out the word down to Afghanistan and other places where there's lots of Muslims, and now there's protests, and now they're going to be pissed off at American soldiers. But this scumbag, he don't care. Condoleezza Rice, meanwhile, said that she shouted at President Bush not to come back to D.C. after 9/11, the bunker that had Vice President Cheney almost ran out of oxygen. This and other tidbits will be featured in a forthcoming documentary on 9/11 called 9/11 State of Emergency on Channel 4 BBC Saturday. So those of you who are listening to me in the UK, it'll be on your television. Back here in the States, we won't get it for a couple of years. We'll probably have it on YouTube in 6 months. Condoleezza Rice revealed that she shouted at President George Bush and banned him from returning to Washington to run the country in the chaotic few hours following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Well, can she really ban the President of the United States? No, she can't. But one thing she can do, she can hang the phone up on him, which is what she did. Roughly 30 minutes after terrorists flew a second hijacked airliner into the World Trade Center in New York, Ms. Rice, then the National Security Advisor, became involved in a heated exchange with President Bush when he telephoned to announce plans to fly back to the White House, which at the time was still considered a potential terrorist target, to take control of the unfolding security crisis. She told him several times to remain in the comparative safety of Florida, where he'd been visiting a school at the time of the attacks. When President Bush attempted to overrule her, Ms. Rice responded by shouting at him. Before he could further argue the toss, or the, I don't know what they mean by the toss. I think that's a,
probably a British term. It's for masturbation.
Will you shut up? No, it's not. Get out of here, you jackass.
What'd you do?
It ain't about that, man.
Thank you, Robert. It ain't about that.
Yeah, it is. That's what they say.
That, not in this context, you jackball. Before he could further argue the issue, shall we say, she promptly ended the call. The president got on the phone and he said, I'm coming back and there ain't no stopping me. No, he didn't say that. He said, I'm coming back. And she recalled in an interview for a British documentary, she said, quote, you cannot come back here. The United States of America is under attack. You have to go to safety. We don't know what's going on out here. You ain't coming back. Do you understand, you dumbass? I'm kidding. She said, you're not coming back, Mr. President. He said, I said to him, you can't. I said in a raised voice, and I never raised my voice to the president before, you cannot come back here, and I hung up. The president was quite annoyed with me, to say the least. I've known the president a long time, and I knew that he wanted nothing more than to be there at the helm of the ship. Now, the comments by Ms. Rice, which will be aired in Channel 4 documentary 9/11 State of Emergency Saturday, provide an intriguing insight into the circumstances surrounding President Bush's immediate response to the 2001 terrorist attack, which at the time were mocked by his opponents. Guy Adams writing for The Independent in Great Britain, and Guy's in Los Angeles, so he ought to know, says, quote, as Michael Moore famously documented in his film Fahrenheit 9/11, Mr. Bush was informed of the first plane hitting the World Trade Center when he was on his way to visit a Florida elementary school. I don't know that he was informed of it when he was on his way. Was he? I want my staff working on this.
What?
Go and find out when President Bush was informed of the first plane hitting the World Trade Center. Was he on his way to the school or was he there?
Well, Michael Moore said he was on his way.
That's why I want you to double check it, because I don't believe his fat ass. In any event, shortly afterwards, an aide told him that a second plane had hit the World Trade Center and that the U.S. was, quote, under attack. His immediate response was to read a book called The Pet Goat to a group of school children for nearly 7 minutes. Now, this is something that is not understood by the press, by the BBC, by Michael Moore, but it is understood to anyone that has children or anyone that wants to make sure that children are not frightened or in a panic about something. The president said that he was going to be there and he was going to read to these children, and if he had gotten up and left quickly, it might have frightened these kids. And it was his instinct, perhaps, as a father or a grandfather that led him to do that. Now, cynical people will say, no, it's because he was gutless. Yeah, okay, you know, whatever. So while the president was sitting there, they say prevaricating, it now emerges that fear and chaos were developing in the bunker beneath the White House, where Ms. Rice had returned with Vice President Dick Cheney. According to my staff, the president was reading to the kids at the time the first plane hit the world. All right, anyway. Communication systems were failing, forcing staff to use unsecure. Look, you can believe what you want. I can lie to you and say, oh, yeah, Michael Moore, the cat, he's dead on. Once again, he's right about everything, and he's just fantastic. And I think that he is just a great guy, and I think he believes in labor, unless, of course, it means the GM is going to exist another week. Then he wants a bunch of guys out in the street because he doesn't want to bail out GM. Floyd Mayweather apologizes for his rant, and Obama says he's being spoken to like a dog. Next on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Anyway, so the BBC, this guy writing in the Independent was basically saying that Bush was evading the truth and that Michael Moore Michael Moore is the guy that really has the inside information. That's what he's saying. When he said the president was prevaricating, that means the president was avoiding the truth of what had just happened. And I think that first of all, there's nothing, absolutely nothing that in the record that says that at all. There are people who are interpreting what he did that wish that it meant that, but that's not what the record indicates. That's not what the facts of the situation indicate. The president found out about this while he was sitting reading to these children. He then finds out about another plane hitting in the middle of reading the children this story, and then he left. And then he wanted to come back to Washington. But because this is such a disappointing piece of fact for this writer, Guy Adams of The Independent, he has to accuse President Bush of prevaricating, which is essentially ignoring the facts of the situation that the World Trade Center had been hit. It's an ignorant and ideologically and politically slanted piece of writing, which is more and more what we get. And I don't care. I mean, as long as I know what I'm reading. And Moore, what are you going to do about Moore? You know, he's not a documentarian. He's a propagandist. But I digress. I'm not going to let that fat creep screw my day up anymore, okay?
Well, I mean, Michael Moore, he did the Fahrenheit 9/11, which was bitching.
Fahrenheit 9/11, I wipe my rear end with, okay? Do you understand me, bud? Wipe my rear end with that whole movie.
Yeah, you wish you would have made it.
Why do I wish I would have made that movie?
Made a lot of money.
Okay, made a lot of money. I don't wish I would have made it. That movie was just a propaganda piece, that's all.
I thought it was a documentary.
It looked like a documentary, but it wasn't a documentary. A documentary is a piece of objective journalism. That was a piece of propaganda. That was a... don't get me on. Okay, just get out of here, you guys, with all of that stuff. I don't want to talk about that, okay?
Yeah, but I mean, wasn't that what it was?
No, it wasn't, man. It was more blaming the world's problems on, you know, his ideologic rivals. That's what, it's Michael Moore saying, I know why the world sucks. It's because there's conservatives, which he may be right in a lot of respects. I think the world sucks because there's a lot of conservatives, too. But I also think the world sucks mighty hard because there's a lot of damn liberals. There's a lot of fat asses like him. There's a lot of jackasses like that preacher there in Gainesville and everybody in between. All right. Speaking of fascists, Floyd Mayweather, I'm kidding around, Floyd. You're funny, but they didn't appreciate the humor of your rant like I did.
This guy was pretty funny.
Let me just do it, okay, bud? Floyd Mayweather apologizes for racist rant on Manny Pacquiao. I really didn't mean it. Really? Well, Floyd Mayweather, as you know, made a series of statements. We aired them for you last week, where he was going on and on and on about Manny Pacquiao and this and that, and it was some people said profane, some people said it was racist. I didn't really hear anything racist in it. I thought it was some lowbrower ethnic humor. Mayweather's apology came via the same vehicle he used to call Pacquiao a yellow chump, U.S. stream and internet video site. It came after a day in which Mayweather was pilloried by media for his original remarks, which first started making the rounds last Thursday. I do want to apologize for what happened the other night. We're going to play for you the apology, and then we're also going to play for you the, the original remarks, which I should play the original remarks, and then we'll play the apology. Here is Floyd Mayweather saying that don't jump on the bandwagon after he beats Manny Pacquiao. The audio quality is less than optimal because Mayweather recorded it on his computer's webcam, and he's screaming his guts loose.
So the fans ain't got to worry about me fighting the midget. Don't worry about it, because, you know, once I kick, hold on, right quick, hold on. Now, once I kick the midget ass, I don't want y'all to jump on my so y'all better jump on, y'all better get on the bandwagon right now, because once I kick the midget ass, I don't want y'all to jump on my all that shit, boy, we knew you was going to do it. Because once I scope the midget, I'm going to make me a sushi roll and cook me some rice.
Okay, so anyway.
And I do want to apologize for what happened the other night. I want to apologize to everybody, because everybody said that they thought it was a racist comment that came from me. And I don't have a racist bone in my body. You know, I love everybody. You know, right here, you know, some of my guys are Muslim. Some of my guys are Jews. You know, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Mexicans, white, it doesn't matter. There's nothing but love in my heart.
Right on, brother.
Boy, what a headache.
So that's Floyd Mayweather. I could play more, but why would I want to do that?
He was making me a sushi roll. He made me a shrimp tempura cut roll. A shrimp tempura cut roll. The teppanyaki room.
Teppanyaki. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show.
Blah 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 blah.
Phil Henry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
But it isn't just Floyd Mayweather. No, it's Morrissey. Floyd Mayweather with his rant about, Manny Pacquiao and the sushi cut roll and the teppanyaki. Well, that's one thing. That's one venue. That is the venue. That is the ring. That's the prize ring. That's professional boxing. But now we move into the world of music. Club music, to be more specific. Dance music. Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Hendry. Morrissey just called the Chinese a subspecies.
This beautiful creature must die.
Oh, shut up. Anyway,
what was that?
That's Morrissey singing some song about meat is murder. Yeah, I'll bet it is.
Yeah, I'll bet it when it's coming from him.
Yeah, you're right, Morrissey. Meat is murder, man. Anyway, he was the lead singer of the Smiths at one time, and he performed that song, Meat is Murder, because he's big time with animal rights, and I can certainly dig that. I'm down with that. The former Smith singer and author of the song, Meat is Murder, is a long-term vegetarian, animal rights advocate, and a campaigner against circuses and zoos. I agree with all of that.
Yeah, you don't like no zoo or anything like that.
No, I don't.
You're not gay, though.
Well, it's got nothing to do with anything. You're not gay, though. So he's gay. So what?
But I just want to make sure that people, it's clear in their minds.
Yo, thank you very much, bud. And now he's... you don't have to pat me on the thigh. Get out of here. Anyway, animal rights advocate, campaigner against circuses and zoos, Morrissey. He is now in hot water. In an interview with the Guardian Weekend magazine, Morrissey has sparked outrage for describing Chinese people as subspecies. Subspecies because of their treatment of animals. Now, Morrissey, who last year abandoned the stage at the Coachella Festival in California because of the smell of cooking meat, he said, but it was actually because nobody was listening to him. They were all wandering off to smoke, a fat blunt. Anyway, described the treatment of animals in China as absolutely horrific, referring to recent news stories about animals in Chinese circuses and zoos. He told interviewer Simon Armitage, "Did you see the thing on the news about their treatment of animals and animal welfare?" And Simon said, "Yes, I wrote it." No, he didn't say that. Absolutely horrific, he said. "You can't help but feel that the Chinese are a subspecies." It really is just crude racism, said Martin Smith, a spokesman for the nonprofit Love Music Hate Racism. "When you start using language like subspecies, either you know what it means, or if you're Morrissey, you don't really. You just remember seeing the movie about the bloodsuckers. You're entering into dark and murky water, and I don't want to be in anything dark or murky with Morrissey around," said Mr. Smith.
Did he really?
No. "I don't think we would or could ask him to come back after that." Come back to what, man? Look, let me explain to you what Morrissey was saying there, okay?
But you gotta admit that racist.
No, hold on for a minute. Hold on. Morrissey, because either he's not sure of the definition of the term. I'm telling you right now, it wasn't racist. It was not racist. No cat like that is going to say something racist, man. That guy is Mr. Politically Correct right on down to his tights. There's no way.
Well, yeah, but he's talked about being a subspecies.
I know that, bud. Will you listen to what I'm saying? Morrissey is like a vegetarian. The cat is like into human rights. The cat's into animal rights. He ain't going to say anything racist. This is what he meant. The term subspecies to Morrissey is like calling somebody a Neanderthal. Is that racist?
Well, I mean...
Yeah, is it racist to say someone's a Neanderthal?
I mean, if you said about a black man...
Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me that I could say it about a white man, it ain't racist? You say it's racist?
Yeah, I think it is if you say it about a black man.
Oh, you're nuts, man. Women have been calling men Neanderthals for decades. Women have been calling men Neanderthals for decades, all right? Is that racist?
Well, it can't be racist, because the women, if the woman called you a Neanderthal and she was black, and say you were black, okay? Let's pretend you were black, okay?
Okay.
And say she called you Neanderthal, okay?
Yeah, okay, fine.
Okay. If you're black and she's not, then it is. But if you're black and...
Shut up, man. What he's trying to say is, if you're a black man, okay?
Yes, I'm listening.
And the woman call you Neanderthal, and maybe she's black and maybe she's white. If she's white and she call you Neanderthal, she's just saying she don't like you like a cruel man. If she's black and she call you Neanderthal, that's racist if you're white. You know?
You know something? Both of you guys are dumber than Morrissey. Oh, look at that. My camera just fell again. Hold on. I now believe that both of you guys are dumber than Morrissey. Hold on for a minute. You know, I'm telling you something, man. I'm starting to really... This is tightening my jaws. This camera going belly up is tightening my jaws, man.
You want me to, like, nail it on there or something?
You're not going to nail anything on there. Will you guys listen to me for a minute? Saying somebody is a subspecies on the surface of it sounds racist. Yes, it does. But that means the person using that term has to be, fairly intelligent. I don't think Morrissey's intelligent just because he thinks that meat is murder or whatever it is you want. Just because this guy believes that, you know, circuses and zoos suck doesn't mean he's a brain surgeon. When he said subspecies, he was thinking like Neanderthal. He was thinking like idiot, like jackass. He didn't understand that what he was saying was essentially less than human, a less than human species. Is it racist? Yes. Did he mean it that way? He's not bright enough.
What are you talking about, Morris? He's gay.
Oh, well, and that must mean he's a genius, huh?
Well, you know, man, they're going to be more, like, smart than other people.
What are you talking about, man? Because the cat's gay, he's a genius.
Well, you got to know what it means.
I'm telling you, no, he doesn't. I'm telling you, he used that term like Neanderthal. He's got to be smart. He's gay.
Well, so he said subspecies, and he's like, yeah, but that's cool. That doesn't mean nothing.
He wasn't even thinking that it was a racist term, because he ain't all that bright. I'm telling you, he's not, man. I'm just telling you. Morrissey said in a statement reacting to criticism of his comments, if anyone has seen the horrific and unwatchable footage of the Chinese cat and dog trade, animals skinned alive, then they could not possibly argue in favor of China as a caring nation. There are no animal protection laws in China, and this results in the worst animal abuse and cruelty on the planet, except for America, which, as you know, everything stinks there. By the way, I'll be appearing in Los Angeles this coming September. No, he didn't say that. Well, you can say all you want, Morrissey, about the Chinese and how they all skinning dogs and cats, right? But you got to admit, you're an idiot. You didn't know what subspecies meant. Because I know that you don't think the Chinese are less than human. I think you were just embarrassed to find out that subspecies meant what it meant, and you don't want your fans to know that you're kind of a blockhead. Listen, he vehemently denied the accusations of racism. I abhor racism and oppression or cruelty of any kind and will not let this pass without being absolutely clear and emphatic. Racism is beyond common sense and has no place in our society, he said in a statement. Well, okay, that proves he's a moron.
Yeah, but I mean, he said a racist thing.
He might have said a racist thing, but he didn't know it was racist. That proves he's an idiot. Simon Price, a music journalist, because his name is Simon and everyone in England who is a music journalist is named Simon and who has followed Morrissey's career closely, said his diehard fans who have idolized him for more than 25 years would be unlikely to desert him because they're just as dumb as he is. But others would be appalled, if not exactly surprised. Aha! The singer appeared to have left little room for explanation in his controversial comment. He added, what are the apologists going to say this time? It looks like in his old age, Morrissey has forgotten to include the ambiguity like he has done in the past. Maybe he just doesn't care anymore. It looks like in his old age, Morrissey's the brain cells are collapsing, and he don't even know what subspecies means anymore. He added, for Morrissey's hardcore fan base, all six of them, no matter what he says, he can do no wrong. He could goose step. He could just shove them into the ovens by the dozens. But this is not going to make those in the media feel favorably toward him. Mm-mm, no siree, Bob, said Simon. And lots of doors will be shut to him that maybe had been ajar in the past. But once they saw him coming, were slammed shut.
Well, that's what they mean, though.
Yeah, that's what they mean.
Yeah, no, the doors were open to him, but then when they saw him coming, they shut him.
Yeah, because...
No, wait, don't. When I make a joke, don't try to make it serious, okay?
No, but that is serious.
No, it's not serious. That we're ajar to him means that we're ajar. Meaning the doors were... There were no doors open to this guy. What doors are going to be open to this guy? He's a dance guy. He's a wacko. He's all in a heap, man. This guy's a wreck. He's a mess. He's all jacked up.
No, but I mean, if the doors were ajar in the past...
And then when they saw Morrissey coming, they slammed them shut.
Then why were they ajar?
Because they thought maybe they'd like to have Morrissey, either in their nightclub or their record label. But then when they saw him coming and they realized that he called the Chinese a subspecies, they said, hey, Billy, would you shut that door? There's a draft in here. I think I smell some. It might be Morrissey.
Man, that's not right, man. You can't laugh about that.
Oh, will you guys get a sense of humor?
Yeah, but you know, he's saying something that's right.
Good for him. He's saying something that's right. I agree with him. There shouldn't be cruelty against animals. I totally agree. I don't disagree. Okay.
Well, then what are you saying?
I'm saying he's an idiot. Don't you understand what I mean by that, an idiot? He doesn't understand what subspecies means. He blurted it out. Then when they told him that it was actually racist, and he looked it up in his Webster's when he had, a, you know, 5 minutes, and he realized they were right, well, he can't. He's got to save face. He can't come out and say, gee, I'm really sorry for being a racist. No, he's Morrissey. He's going to stand up for the dogs and cats. So he goes out there, he stands up for the dogs and cats. He does not apologize for saying what he said. He's saying that whatever he said can't be as bad as what the Chinese do to cats and dogs. And that's where that's at, man. And that's the end of the ball game. And so this Simon guy...
Yeah, well, the Simon guy is saying because he won't apologize, then they're going to slam the door shut that used to be ajar.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
Well, what are you saying?
And I was making a joke out of that. I was saying the doors are ajar, and they're going to slam them shut as soon as they smell Morrissey coming. That's all. It's no different from what you guys were saying. God. What do I got to explain everything 50 times to you guys for?
I don't understand, man. You're trying to be funny.
Yeah, somebody's got to be. For Morrissey's hardcore fan base, no matter what he says, he can do no wrong. Of course not. But this is not going to make those in the media feel favorably toward him, and lots of doors will be shut to him that maybe had been ajar in the past. Whatever. Coming up, why is the homeless in San Francisco upset with McDonald's, or why are the homeless in San Francisco upset with McDonald's? We'll let you know. Do you care? Oh, you don't? Well, then we won't let you know. Plus, are asteroids going to hit the Earth? No, they are not, but they're going to get close. We'll tell you about it coming up. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Morrissey's saving the cat.
Phil Hendry.
Thank you. You know, Morrissey, as long as the door's ajar, man, you might as well just push it all the way open and come on out.
That's outing him.
I'm not outing him, man. How can you out Morrissey? Man, that cat's been outed. He's just outed himself. All right, two asteroids to pass Earth closer than the moon. If they hit, we die. No, I'm kidding. But they're not going to hit, and the scientists tell us that we're completely cool and it's all beautiful, but they are going to be passing us closer to us than the moon is, and I imagine, based upon the movies I've seen, were they to hit, all life on this planet as we know it would cease to exist. However, I don't believe any of that. I believe, and can I just bring this up now, because this is the argument that I was having?
You're not going to talk about that, man.
I am going to talk about it. Now, I'm going to say it to you one more time. If an asteroid killed all the dinosaurs and the Earth was covered over with all kinds of a nuclear winter and everything was bad and everything sucked, right? Okay. Then what was that explosion that happened in Russia back in the 1900s that was in the middle of that forest that was a comet, man? That wasn't a meteor. That wasn't an asteroid. That was a comet, Jack. That's what they think it was. That hit the Earth and flattened that forest for miles around. Now, that was one hell of an explosion. That was a major, major, major event. And people still are, scientists are still talking about it and theorizing as to what it was. And that happened in the forests of Russia, I think around the turn of the century, around 1910, 1911, something like that. As big as any asteroid hitting the planet. I mean, Jack, it was, at the very least, it was some kind of a massive meteor. Hit the planet, and guess what?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, no, yeah, but.
Yeah, but I mean, you're trying to say... What are you trying to say? That couldn't have been as big.
Well, how big's it got to be, man? If they're telling me that one freaking asteroid, man, hits the planet Earth and makes such an explosion that it kills all the dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
Then why didn't that one that hit in Russia at the turn of the 20th century, why didn't that kill everything on the planet?
I don't think it was as big.
Well, how big? Look at, man, all I know is these guys talk about this meteor that hit the planet Earth as being big enough. You know, they think they found the crater. It's no bigger than the size of the radius of the explosive, the area that seems to be affected by that explosion in 1910. It's about the same size explosion. I, you know, science sometimes has a tendency to overstate the case because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to be wrong. But I think sometimes you got to understand. I mean, how do you know? Now they're finding out that that's a bunch of bullcrap.
No, it's not. About the meteor killing a dinosaur?
They're saying that it could be bullcrap.
No, it's not.
Oh, really? Well, then how come, Bud, they find no dinosaur bones, okay, at the level of the explosion? They find dinosaur bones, I think they find the dinosaur bones before the level of the explosion. But they don't, in other words, they don't find any dinosaur bones, the direct result of that meteor.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. All I'm telling you is this, that explosion killed off all the dinosaur. I saw the thing on TV. They animated it and everything.
Oh, well, if they made a cartoon out of it, man.
No, not a cartoon. They animated it.
Well, that must mean that it's true then, if they animated it.
You know what I mean.
Homeless upset. I don't want to talk about it. Homeless upset about McDonald's dollar menu increase. Advocates say McDonald's targeting homeless. Well, that's terrible. That is fascism. Some unhappy meals are being served at a McDonald's in San Francisco. Homeless advocates say the decision by one of the restaurants to do away with the dollar menu is a ploy to get rid of the homeless. Maybe. Is there something wrong with that? Anyway, the McDonald's restaurant at the corner of Haight and Stanyan is the center of all the fuss. The dollar menu there was taken away about 1 month ago, and now items on what used to be the dollar menu now cost about a whole $1.50. The decision made by the owner of the franchise, how dare he, does not particularly affect any of the other McDonald's in the area. However, the restaurant is located across the street from Golden Gate Park, and an almost steady stream of homeless people who often order the cheapest items available on the menu now say the approximately half-dollar difference in price sometimes means the difference is the difference between eating and not eating. It is no wonder that some believe the price hike was aimed at the homeless population. That means that the dollar menu is a hoax, a fraud, a phony, said Blake Edwards, a homeless man. Franchise owner Natalie Gonzalez says the homeless had nothing to do with the price change. She released a statement saying this was a business decision based on a number of contributing factors. And while there are items that are no longer available at a dollar, they are still available at what I believe to be a good everyday value. If you work for a living. No, she didn't say that.
Yeah, man, that's racist if she did.
No, that's not racist. In other words, she says it was a business decision aimed at making a little more money because while the restaurant is located near the park and may receive a number of homeless customers, it also sees a lot of tourists. And you'll excuse me very much if I want to make some money with this here McDonald's. Thank you. God. Here it is, June 30th, 1908, in the Tungshuka River area of something Russia. Estimates of the energy of the blast range from 5 to as high as 30 megatons of TNT. Lord have mercy.
What was that? That was the thing that blowed up?
Yeah, it blowed up in 1908.
Yeah, but that's not as bad as what killed a dinosaur.
How do you know, man? And it came from outer space, man. It flew in from outer space, just like those asteroids. So you're going to tell me, oh, well, the thing that killed the dinosaurs, yeah, that was really big because we were all around to see that one, weren't we? And this thing that hit the forests of Russia back in 1908, well, hell, that was only 30 megatons of TNT, and that couldn't possibly have been as bad as the asteroid that, I mean, I think it's just, all of this speculation is horse dung.
Man, that's all you ever say. It's a horse dung if it don't prove your point.
Because on account of, you know why? Because you don't want to believe the dinosaurs was killed by the meteorite.
I ain't saying that I don't want to believe it, bud. I'm just saying that I'm waiting for all the facts to come in. You know, if you pardon me for saying that, you know, I'd rather not just jump to conclusions. Our show was produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wigan, and, of course, our screener Dan Northcraft. Great job tonight, Dan. And, Bud, thank you.
I hate you.
Yeah, I hate you, too. Thank you, too. Robert, PhilHenryShow.com, PhilHenryShow.com for all your radio needs.
Phil Hendry.